Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, happy Sunday. Welcome to
the
Two Matts question and answer
first
podcast.
Q&A of 2024.
So should we jump straight in?
Let's
with
just go for
our
it.
First question from Deborah. Should Liz Truss have had an honours list?
My God, no. I mean, 49 days in office and you get an honours list and... I mean, people on it like Matthew Elliott, the vote, yeah. The Leave guy, and but I mean, leave aside the people on it. I mean, just the idea that after the most disastrous premiership in history, yeah. Recent history anyway, and so brief,
yeah,
49 days you get a I mean, I don't think Gordon Brown and Tony Blair had one. Blair didn't have one because of cash for honours, which would have been tricky.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it is the case that many
don't.
Don't.
Well, this is my point. I don't think any of them should have a bloody honours list.
It's a ridiculous tradition and we should just ditch it. And
well, it just feeds into this narrative of cronyism, doesn't it? You know, that if you're crony enough, then at the end of it, you get a seat in the House of Lords.
Yes, the automaticity of it is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, look, if you are a very distinguished public servant or you gave something to the nation during your time in government or something, and there will be a handful of people who fit
course,
that bill,
yeah.
Then great. Yeah. And they should get honours in the usual fashion.
Yeah.
But the idea that when a Prime Minister, however ignominiously, leaves office, they're entitled to give all their mates a peerage or a knighthood or a damehood. This is absurd. It's actually very unfair. One of the good things about the honours system is that there are now people who are not famous getting honours.
Yes.
But how this debases that currency.
Totally.
I mean, people who've done amazing things in charities and just neighbourhood public service get awards. And then these clowns...
Yeah. Who've done their job at great profit to themselves.
Yes, and in the case of Liz Truss, have actually tanked the economy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was all that she did.
Do you think she wanted to give Quasi... Have they fallen out completely, Quasi?
Well, I think that having sacked him, it would have been difficult to... for her to give him a peerage, you know. But
I know a few titles I could give him, but...
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's a very good question, and thank you, Deborah, because I think it's sort of... It's one of those... teachable moments where you have to sort of put your hands up and say, maybe it's time we stop this.
Yeah. Because be a good one for Starmer to throw
it,
into
it really
the mix,
would, because
it?
I will, if Starmer said, you know, if elected, I will not have a resignation honours list, that would be a very good down payment.
And he could say, because I expect the people who I would have honoured in that way to be doing it for public service and not to accept baubles at the end of
I mean,
the day.
I'm not going to appoint special advisors and ministers and you know, take money from donors on the basis that they're going to get a peerage or a knighthood or whatever.
You know, I think it should be auto-disbarring that. If you would accept a title,
exactly.
you mustn't be offered one. You
yes, know? No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think she has, I mean, she is a disgrace and she will continue to be a disgrace.
Yes, and we'll keep seeing it every bloody Remembrance Sunday, won't
we? One of the things that, exactly, but not just that. I mean, what's interesting is how she is now playing the American circuit and becoming one of the many prospective ambassadors for MAGA in this country.
I don't think she's smart enough to do it, to be honest.
I don't either, but I think that, you know, she'll be on GB News.
But she'll be on Fox, won't
she? And
she
is on Fox sometimes.
A lot,
and
you know.
I mean, look, will she be consequential? No. Mm. But she'll be an irritant.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay. Well, thank you, Deborah, for the first question of 2024. Let's move on to question number two.
Hi, Matt. What do you think should be done about the disproportionate public prominence of think tanks? I'm thinking about those emanating out of Tufton Street. Deep Dean Dance.
Thank you, Deep Dean Dance.
What do you reckon, Matt? Do you think they're all evil?
Well, I think they're all very self-interested, and that's the point. And I think the answer to the question for me is all about transparency. And I don't mind people having vested interests, but what I do mind is people having access to government that is funded through all sorts of nefarious means,
yeah,
without anybody really knowing who is paying for what and what the end gain is. So if somebody said, okay, I work for a tobacco company and I want to make the case for, you know, not restricting advertising at sports events or whatever it might be, and being totally honest about it, and this is who's paying for it, and this is, and people would sit back and say, well, I understand why you're saying that, but you can F off. But that's not how it works.
No.
The way these things work is that it's all behind closed doors. It's a network of people who have all got a meshed interest. And there's corruption involved as well. You know, there's no two ways about it. The reason people hide things is that they're ashamed of the arguments they're making, but they want to gain from them. So I think greater legislated transparency around think tanks, yes, and how they operate is,
I mean,
the answer.
And I think also one has to say there are some good think tanks out there. So I, yeah, think Demos under Polly Curtis is great.
Yes.
I think Resolution Foundation under Torsten Bell is very good.
Yeah.
You know, I declare an interest because I was the first chair of Bright Blue, Ryan Shorthouse's outfit, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a, you know, an attempt to have a kind of centre-right think tank that isn't, doesn't have the Tufton Street stink on it. And, you know, those think tanks, they're not in that nexus.
But they're not trying to hide anything, are they?
100% not. Yeah. And they all have in common a high level of transparency, and, yeah, and you have to have it. But I think that it's interesting that Tufton Street has become, you know, such a bogeyman word. It really, yeah, has. And I think that says nothing good about the relationship between, you know, think tanks, which ought to be what they say. You know, they should be places where ideas are generated. But actually, they're basically, in many cases, they're just another form of lobbying group. You
totally,
know, it's a, yeah, way of buying access, yeah, to government.
And so, and where it gets really scary is when you get people with scary ideas. And this goes back to the last question, where you got the Institute of Economic Affairs led by Mark Littlewood. But now Lord Mark Littlewood, I think.
Yeah, you get to the, you very know, quickly.
And they've absolutely screwed the economy with their nonsense ideas.
Yes.
And no one knows who pays for them. He's been on Question Time a number of times and asked, and complete, oh, you know, it's, we don't have to declare who owns us, no, and all of this, who funds them. I think you should do.
No, of course.
Why wouldn't you say we're funded by X, Y, and Z? People always say to us on Twitter, some of these arsy people, well, who funds the New European? Well, actually, the answer is people who buy the New European.
Yes.
We haven't even got advertising. You know, yeah, so we're completely funded and we're solvent based on the number of people who, yes, buy us each week. I've got nothing to... But if somebody said, if the European Union said, would you take £500,000 to do this project? I wouldn't necessarily say no, but I would insist that everybody knew completely.
You have to be completely, yeah, transparent.
Utterly transparent.
If you're out there, Ursula.
Yes, yes, Ursula. Focus not, on the bit where I said I wouldn't necessarily
say
no.
What, he means it.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Deep Dean Dance. Not your real name, I suspect, but...
who knows, you know?
It'd be very embarrassing if Deep Dean Dance got in touch and
he turns
said,
up, there's a Deep Dean Dance waiting in reception for Mr. Kelly.
Next question, please. What is your view of the fact that the British abroad now have Vote for Life in the UK? Do you think this will change the dynamics of British government? Chris Platts. Thank you, Chris, for your question.
Is this the idea that people who live in Malaga...
Is it just Malaga?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Is the point that expats, sort of Ray Winston in Sexy Beast can, yeah, can vote in the forthcoming election, and this is a scandal? And I don't know. Will it change the dynamics of British government?
I can't think it would it?
I can't think so. I mean, I suppose the truth of the matter is, I kind of believe no taxation without representation, but also no representation without taxation.
Yes.
So I think if you are voting, you should be...
On the hook for something.
On, yeah, the hook, yeah, because, yeah, I'm not wild about the idea of people who are not going to live with the consequences of the voting, yeah, decisions they take.
What constituency do they vote into, though?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, presumably...
There's no MP for Malaga. Last time I looked.
I suppose it depends upon you being registered.
Yeah.
These are people who must have residences here, I suppose.
Yeah, and you lived in
and you spent half the year in, yeah, Malaga,
Slough,
or
yeah,
and then you go back to Slough
to vote for
a fascist for flying home to vote for reform,
yeah,
because Mr. Tice is, you know, a change maker if ever there was one. So yes, I can't claim to have very high level of views on that. But like I said, I think, you know, if you're not paying tax, you shouldn't get a vote. Yeah. Or not eligible for tax.
I don't think it'll change the dynamics of British government.
I don't think you can stand down on that.
Yeah, thank you for
your
question.
Stand down and stand by, as Mr. Trump would say.
Thank you for listening to The Two, Matt. And if you like the kind of conversations we have here, there are loads more to be had in print and online at The New European. And I have got a very special offer for all listeners of The Two, Matt. We are giving away copies of Alistair Campbell's Diaries 2023, which is a book we're publishing this month. It's a fantastic diary full of everything that's happened, all the people he's met, and anybody who's a fan of Alistair Campbell's diaries over the years know how brilliantly he turns them out. He is very much a latter-day Samuel Pepys.
He really is.
He is. So you can get a free copy of Alistair Campbell's Diaries 2023, worth £20 when you subscribe to The New European from as little as £1 a week. Or if you like getting the newspaper delivered to your door every single week, you can have that for just another £1 a week. And that's a 75% saving on the price you'll pay at the newsagents. To get this great offer, go to www.theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matt.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Next question, please. Yes. Why does Britain persist in including the word empire in its honours? And would either of you accept one if offered? So this is like member of the British Empire.
Yeah, well,
Order of the British Empire.
There's been a long-standing suggestion that empire should be changed to excellence, which I think is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Can't argue with that. Because it is silly having
I really like Legion d'honneur.
It's very sexy, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and if Mr. Macron is listening,
out there,
accept one of them.
We're being very venal today. And in that spirit, I was thinking about this on the way, and actually, I'm not going to be mealy-mouthed. If I was offered one, I would accept it. But I don't actually think journalists should get honours, really.
I agree.
There's one exception to that, which is I think that those that have shown physical courage, like war correspondents. So when my friend Christina Lamb was given an OBE, I was thrilled to bits because, you know, she's super brave. But the old tradition, that which seems, I think, to have stopped, that the editor of the Times automatically got a knighthood, and most of the Telegraph editors I've known were either become lords and, you know, knight. This is silly. You know, we are meant to throw rocks at the bottles, not organise the bottles, aren't we? You know.
So I wouldn't accept one on the basis that.
Well, so Matt Kelly, it does have a good ring to it.
My grandfather and my grandmother on my dad's side both got honoured after the war.
Really?
Joseph Sylvester Kelly was given the OBE. He was mayor of Bootle during the Blitz in 1941-42 and was known as the Tin Hat Mayor because during the Blitz he went out with the rest of them digging people out of the rubble in Bootle. And the Bootle Times wrote a quite magnificent epitaph to the end of his mayoralhood. Hats off to the mayor and this marvellous thing which my dad has got on his wall framed.
That's brilliant.
And my nana was given the MBE for her work in the WVS, now the WRVS.
Yes,
the Women's Voluntary Service.
Again, proper stuff.
Yeah, real. And that's why I wouldn't accept one, because I think taking the piss out of a government on the front page of a newspaper doesn't equate digging people out of rubble in Bootle.
No, exactly. I mean, my father was a CB, which is a Companion of the Order of Bath, and that was, you know, reflected 30, 40 years in, you know, keeping jobs alive in Scotland as a Whitehall official.
Yeah.
And I thought I was really thrilled for him when he got that. And,
yeah. That's proper stuff.
Proper stuff. I mean, the reason I'm able to answer it with jollity is that I can't conceive of anything I could ever do that would
match that.
That would matter. You know, that's a choice you make when you become a journalist, I think. You know, some journalists, a lot of journalists get it because they then become special advisors and all that.
Yeah.
Malarkey.
Terrible.
But if you stay a journalist, I can't really see what would give you, you know.
There's a reason. Sir Will Lewis.
Sir Will de Lewis.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, Will Lewis, who's now the chief exec of the Wall Street Journal.
The Washington Post.
Washington Post. Quite right. And he got it because he was very pally with David Cameron, right? A special advisor to David Cameron, is that right?
He was friends with David Cameron, yeah.
And was a former Telegraph editor. Yeah. But to be fair to Will Lewis, he came from very kind of humble beginnings, didn't he? You know, he's risen to the top of society.
Yes.
And so Sir William Lewis. But I just can't say it with a straight face, Sir William Lewis.
I mean, that's the problem, is that whenever a journalist is ennobled or given it's as I say, apart from war correspondence, it is intrinsically funny.
It invites mockery.
Well, I mean, because the whole business of being a journalist is to be a critic and a satirist.
To be anti-establishment.
And to undercut things and undermine things. And suddenly to, you know, be the person that says, I think you've made a mistake, do you know who I am? That's not a good look, is it, really?
Thank you, Frank Jackson from Southport. Great question. Next question, please. Oh, what's better, to be a traitor or a faithful? Muhammad Khan in Haringey.
Now, I should say that
got a clue.
I have no idea. And this is yet another gap in my Emmental knowledge. So you're going to have to fill me in and explain.
This question is all about The Traitors,
which is the TV show.
BBC TV show, which is based on a game that I used to play called Werewolf, which is
also known as Mafia.
Where you get a group of you, and it sounds very kind of pure, but it's actually
it's
quite
a very
good
game. I understand now. Yeah,
and you've got a number of traitors amongst you,
yes,
or werewolves in that case. And you've got a number of, most of you are faithfuls, and the whole game is how do you work out who's a faithful and who's a traitor? And the faithfuls have to get rid of all of the traitors. And if at the end
who
of the game...
Who are villagers in werewolves.
Exactly, yeah. That's right. They're villagers, yeah. And at the end of the game, if there's one werewolf remaining, so the werewolf has convinced all the other players that he or she is actually a faithful, then the werewolf or the traitor wins everything. So... And it's become this huge...
Huge show. Yeah.
I think, surprisingly, I don't think
And it's gone abroad. I mean, I heard John Burko on a podcast saying that he was going to be in the US or Australian version of it.
Yeah. I've seen the Australian... Because my nine-year-old is obsessed with it.
He's obsessed with it, yeah.
Yeah, look, and it's one of those things we can watch together, you know.
Yes.
And Claudia Winkleman is brilliant in it.
She's a very good presenter.
Fantastic. I'd love to know what she's got tattooed on her forehead though. There's something clearly, like, she must
under
have
the fringe,
like an incriminating tattoo on
fringe,
her forehead,
yeah,
under the fringe that never moves. But
she's a very good broadcaster.
She's amazing.
So the answer, so all right, well,
so what is the, I would definitely be a want to be a traitor.
Me too. Yeah, on the basis of what you describe it. And also I gather from there have been sort of people who've done Ponzi research about werewolf, and the werewolves generally win.
They do, yes, they do.
So,
they do. Yeah.
So on
they
the basis do. That, you know, on that basis alone.
Yeah.
So yes, a traitor.
But it should be said that you don't pick. You know, someone decides.
Designated
in the game, you get given
a card.
You know,
it's not self ID.
No, exactly. You know? Otherwise, you just have 12 werewolves and no villages.
Today, right. I shall mostly be a traitor.
Thank you, Mohammed, for that question.
All right.
Have we got any more questions?
Ah,
oh, this is a good one.
This is one. Derek, not Clive. Well, I mean, the name itself is one about which we could perhaps save that for another one.
Yeah.
Is Dave Chappelle still funny? Okay, well, this, I think, references his new, Chappelle's new special on Netflix, which is called The Dreamer, which I watched and enjoyed over the year. And I think he is still funny. Anyone who knows me knows that Chappelle is on my sort of Mount Rushmore of people I kind of part of my inner voice. I think he's a genius, and I've been to see him, taken my kids to see him. And so
just describe his style to people who don't know him.
The thing to say about Chappelle is that he's really had two acts. One was when he was really very young. I mean, he started stand-up when he was 14 in DC and around there. And then he had a very popular TV show on Comedy Central called The Chappelle Show, the third series of which he felt was becoming racist. And he left $50 million on the table and walked away, went to Africa. And although he carried on performing, he was quite recessive and reclusive for a lot of years. And then he came back, bulked up, he'd been to the gym, and he did a massive $60 million deal with Netflix and did a whole series of specials. And my personal favorite was not really a special, but during COVID, about 12 days after the George Floyd murder, it's on YouTube, you can see it, he did an outdoor show, socially distant, called eight Minutes and 46 Seconds.
Yeah, I've seen that, it's great.
And it was at that moment I thought that Chappelle rose from being a great stand-up to being a sort of great voice of his generation. And he is edgy and very offensive sometimes, but I personally think he's a genius. So my answer is yes.
But this is the accusation, isn't it, that he's punching down.
And look, here's the thing about this, which is it's become sort of baked into the culture that you're not meant to punch down in humour. This is nonsense. Satire and humour forever has involved punching down.
Yeah.
The question is it funny? Mm. When you go into a comedy room, you are entering into a contract where things are said and things are laughed at that would never be laughed at in work or at home or whatever. You know, that's the nature of comedy. It's about being funny.
Yeah.
And the kind of literalism where people think that comedians mean what they say and are trying to make life difficult for particular groups. This is just a total misunderstanding.
And the group, we should call it out, the group that is transgender.
Yes, and I don't want to spoil it, but in the new special, anticipating the fact that everyone will be expecting him to make jokes about transgender people, Chappelle does a very funny reverse ferret, but I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Good. I haven't seen it though, yet, not necessarily looking forward to it.
Though not necessarily in a way that will satisfy his woke critics. But, you know, Dave Chappelle is someone who is 100% and with his pocket committed to social and racial justice and does a huge amount for, you know, underprivileged African-American kids and other groups.
Yeah.
This is the thing I mean is he doesn't have to prove his credentials to anyone.
Yeah.
And when I see white middle-class students in this country, sorry guys, but, you know, one has to call it what it is, saying, oh, you know, he's just a fascist. No, he isn't. You know, he really isn't.
I haven't seen the Chappelle show, but the one that I have seen, which was linked in the reviews of the Dave Chappelle show, was Ricky Gervais's special, Armageddon.
I don't think they're on a par. You know, I don't think.
So I've seen that. My wife and daughter went to see the live show and thought it was fantastic and came back raving about him. But I watched the special on Netflix and I thought a lot of it was pretty crap, to be honest.
I think Chappelle is the GOAT.
Yeah,
and I think Ricky Gervais is someone who's written some very good sitcoms.
Well, Frankie Boyle, who's got form himself when it comes to offending offending people. Plenty of form.
But Michael Jackson's Children's Hospital strikes me as one of the bits that
And also the one was Jordan and Harvey.
That was a joke
It has not aged well. He said, and I think this is true, is that Ricky Gervais just isn't a stand-up comedian. Mm. You know, he's not. He's a very funny actor. He's a very funny writer, but he's not a stand-up. And there were parts of his show which I thought, I love being offended in a funny way, but you're not offending me. Cause the only offence you're doing is to comedy because it's just not funny, you know, some of this.
Crimes against comedy.
Yeah, it's like a lot of it is just banal. And
being funnily offensive is very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, I mean, the idea that you just are offensive and that's funny is silly. That's not how funniness is a very difficult thing to be. I mean, the level of talent that these... I mean, the guy who is now quite long dead, actually, Patrice O'Neill, another African-American comedian who I think was incredibly gifted and would have been up there with Chappelle if he'd survived, died of diabetes. You know, he was unbelievably rude about everyone, especially white people. But if you listen to his specials... It's in the cadence, it's in the rhythm. The guy is a genius of how to say things. It's not a skill easily acquired. It's, I mean, talk about the, you know, the 10,000 hour rule. You know, these are guys that have gone up gone up through clubs and done, they've done five gigs a night. It's not easy to do it. It really isn't. It looks easy.
What's the best stand-up gig you've ever been to?
I took my two lads to see Chappelle at the Adelphi in the Strand. And he was fantastic. I then went on my own to watch him and Chris Rock do a double act at the O2, which was sort of absurd, a kind of talent explosion. But the Adelphi gig was something else. It was really very special.
The show that I saw, and I saw it when I was about 17 or something like this, which I've never forgotten and represents the kind of high watermark for stand-up, was Robin Williams at the Metropolitan. And, you know, it's...
You saw him at the Met?
No, I didn't see him then. I'm talking about the TV show of it. Yeah, my God, I wish I'd...
It's brilliant.
I mean, it is astonishingly good. And what talent that guy is.
I mean, he absolutely... Robin Williams incarnates the point, which is to be that good... The cost,
the personal cost is immeasurable,
immense, and you know he paid for it in all sorts of ways. So I have a kind of obsession with stand up, really, which is I think that it's one of the last remaining spaces where you can really say things that are unsayable, but in a way that it doesn't necessarily hurt anyone.
No, and it has a sort of shamanistic role in which that you know, you can direct, and maybe this is what's happening, you know, you can direct all your ire and angst and confusion at these people and they absorb it. But I one small point about Ricky Gervais that I thought was interesting was that I wonder whether he is not surrounded by any critical voices anymore, or certainly enough. He referenced his partner Jane a lot, saying Jane said don't do this, don't do that. But there was one point in it where he was talking about the end of Schindler's List. It was the end of some riff on Schindler's List, which I found boring. But he got the end of it. The point he made at the end, he got it. It was totally misconstrued. He said at the end, we've got a procession of Holocaust relatives laying stones to remember. They're the people in the film.
In the film, that's the
with
point.
With the actors. He got it complete. And I thought, okay, whether or not that alters... is set or not, but
it's sloppy.
All of those shows,
nobody said
to him, mate, no, that's not what happens at the end of Schindler's List. It's wrong.
I mean, you know? One of the things that you hear when you listen to comedians podcasts and so on, which I do far too much at the time, is how much, especially when they're coming up, they would sit around the, you know, there was a famous table at the Comedy Store where Kevin Hart, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton, Bill Burr would sit and just tear horrendous chunks out of each other. Yeah. And Patrice O'Neill used to, when he was bored by the young Kevin Hart, used to just throw a telephone directory onto the stage and say, read it out, that'll be more interesting, right? Now, that is the level of sort of group accountability and peer pressure that you're, I think, rightly saying is absent there. Yeah. You know, because you're right. I mean, that I remember now, you mentioned it, you're absolutely right, that he did completely get the end of Schindler wrong.
It's just totally erroneous.
And
it's
a schoolboy error, actually.
And he has done, in preparation for that televised show, he's done
countless gigs. Yes.
Perfecting it and honing it. And nobody said to him, Ricky, great show, but
you've completely got
that wrong.
And normally they do two recordings.
Yeah.
So there was full team, probably nine cameras.
Yes.
You know, full sound production team and everyone, and no one.
It's just such an obvious mistake, and no one pointed out to him. So, Dave Chappelle, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And Derek, not Clive, you just wait till the two Matts do. Yeah. When we do the O2, you're going to see, you know,
version.
I'll tell you what gives me. Anyway.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We're not going to go there yet.
I think that's enough for this week. So,
just on the Derek and Clive point.
Before we trip into Derek and Clive live on the podcast, we'll move on.
The worst job I ever had, Matt.
Thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful Sunday.
Have a great
Sunday. If you're
listening
on Sunday. If not, have a great week. And please get in your questions for our next show.
Send those questions. The really email, want to see those questions.
The email address is 2matts, that's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S, at tnepublishing.com. And if you're listening on Spotify, there's a little dialogue box. You can just ask your question in there. And if you just wanted to give us some feedback as well, we're very interested in that. Please don't forget to subscribe to The New European. If you like what you hear on the podcast, you will love The New European. And you can get all of our journalism from less than £1 a week. So
bargain.
Bargain, mate. So thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Next Friday morning on our regular podcast.
Absolutely.
Have a great
good
week, folks.